just because our brands are heritage brands, we don't want them to be sitting in museums today. We want them living in culture. We want them active. We want people aspiring for them today as much as they did 100 or 200 years ago.
There's a revolution taking place right now.
Talent and intelligence are equally distributed throughout the world, but opportunity is not.
The talent economy, the idea that at the center of work is the talent, is the individual.
The way we work has changed forever, and highly skilled talent is demanding flexibility around the way they work and the way they live. This podcast brings together thought leaders, staffing experts, and top talent to talk about the evolving nature of work and how companies can navigate these changes to remain competitive, drive innovation, and ensure success. Welcome to the Talent Economy Podcast.
I'm your host, Michelle Labby, Chief People Officer at TopTel. LVMH, Moët Hennessy, Louis Vuitton is the world's largest luxury goods group, known for its portfolio of 75 iconic brands, or maisons, as LVMH calls them. Their maisons include household names like Louis Vuitton, Dom Perignon, Bulgari, and Christian Dior, each with its own style and history. Headquartered in Paris, LVMH has been dedicated to creative momentum and a constant quest for excellence. The workforce behind this mission, 196,000 employees across their maisons and around the globe. Today's guest is Gina Smith, Chief Human Resources Officer for LVMH North America. Gina plays a key role in fostering LVMH's signature culture of creativity and excellence amongst the company's 40,000 North American employees. Prior to joining LVMH in 2011, she spent more than a decade working closely with leading retail and luxury brands throughout notable industry consultancies. Gina is a member of the advisory board for Tiffany & Company and a board of director for Gabriella Hearst. She is also on the board of governors for Parsons School of Design and a proud new board of governors member of the Fashion Scholarship Fund. I'm excited to hear how she maintains such an iconic workforce. Welcome, Gina.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm very happy to be here, and I'm so appreciative for the invitation.
So you have a bachelor's international business from University of Indianapolis. So I'm curious, what led you specifically to the human resources area for international business?
I had the opportunity to study abroad in Greece in the beginning of college. And that was really the first time that I had been out of the country. And it was, I would say it was really a life transformative experience for me, because I discovered this whole new world, people from all over Europe, working in a five-star hotel on the island of Crete. And I didn't really know it at the time that my fascination was going to be with people. But what I learned was how much I loved learning about cultures, different cultures, and being around people. So I came back and said, okay, my degree has to be international business. I don't know what I'm going to do professionally, but it has to have an international dimension to it. Now, when I look back on it, of course, I realize, oh, that was really the beginning for me of thinking about human resources, because what I loved was, again, just learning about people, learning about the cultures, understanding what motivates and inspires people, and learning about not only the similarities, but of course the differences around the world and how people live, think, and work. So it wasn't an intention to work in HR. And frankly, it took me a few years to actually get to an HR position. But now that I'm here, I see it couldn't be a more perfect fit for me and my passions.
So in addition to English, you speak French, Greek, and Mandarin.
I mean, for me, language is the best way for you to really understand the culture, because just the simple exercise of seeing how people put together sentences gives you insight really into how they think. If you're going to live in a country, or like now working for a French company, I want to be able to experience that as much as I can in as authentic way as I can. So I'm not fluent in French, but I've studied it for many years. I can understand a lot. And again, it really helps me to understand the culture more and to be more of an active participant in our group, and to really understand and appreciate the French culture and all of those different cultures that I had the chance to study.
I assume that you go to France a lot then.
I go to France a lot. I'm headed tomorrow. And it's funny, because as many times as I've been to France, I haven't seen that much of Paris because I go for work all the time. So
That's my same story.
Yes. You travel all the time. Somebody was asking me for recommendations recently. I said, I'm kind of embarrassed because I don't, I just go, I work and I come home. But you know, there are certainly worse places to work than Paris.
Yes. I said, I've seen the Eiffel Tower twice from a taxi.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So we are a global company as well. We're remote in 75 countries. So I understand the language culture barriers or not. But at TopTel, we believe that our cultural attributes or, you know, the values that that we stand for are baked into our company DNA. So I know that your maisons are different. Are there any values, though, that extend across the entire group? And what are, you know, what's unique about all the cultures that feed into LVMH as a whole?
Within LVMH, we have one core belief, which starts with people. People make the difference. And then we have four values that are creativity and innovation, excellence, entrepreneurship, and purpose. And by the way, these values we actually built with our employees. We launched this values exercise in 2015. It was a global exercise. We went around the world having workshops with all of our employees, or as many as we could have, and really tried to understand from them what's important to you in terms of the organization that you work for. What do you believe your Maison or LVMH represent from a value standpoint? And how do you see that for the future? So we came together in the creation of these values, working together with our employees based on, again, what they see and feel and what type of environment they want to work in. These values are really what bind us as a group. So when you look across all the different maisons, there may be some additional values that a maison has implemented because they believe it's core to their business, to their DNA, their heritage. But all of our maisons would attribute these values as being essential and underpinning their organization. And again, that's sort of the framework and the benchmark of when we look at bringing any brand into the group or look at developing a brand. Tiffany was no different. I mean, we saw Tiffany as being an organization that really puts people at the center. It's very much driven around creativity, innovation, the same value around excellence, entrepreneurship, going back to the heritage and the founder, and then a very strong sense of purpose in all of the work that they've done around CSR and philanthropy. And so for us, it fit very neatly into the organization. Now, they have other values that are important to them and have been embedded in their organization for years, but they look at the values of the group and they feel an affinity with those values. So again, it's the common thread that binds us as a group and keeps us all really together as an organization. And that's really the mission and the philosophy of the group. We look at ourselves as an ecosystem of brands. Again, there's a synergy either in terms of business categories, and there's a synergy in terms of the cultural values. But every brand has its own very unique DNA and heritage, and we have to preserve that really at all costs. We want to stay as true as we can to the vision of the founder. Obviously, bringing that into the modern times, as one of our executives says in Paris a lot, just because our brands are heritage brands, we don't want them to be sitting in museums today. We want them living in culture. We want them active. We want people aspiring for them today as much as they did 100 or 200 years ago, and hopefully in 100 years from now, if we do our job well. But we really want to manage each brand independently, giving a lot of autonomy to the leaders and to the employees to have a unique and very authentic experience. From a customer standpoint, from an employee standpoint, we have to preserve that. And that really becomes our unique competitive differentiator. We're not a monolithic group, and we certainly don't ever want to be, even if we definitely have synergies across the business, across all of the portfolio.
So these iconic brands that you have, it's very creative, right? You're in a creative industry. A lot of times there's a lot of creative risks that go along with that, right? There's fashion lines that go every year or new launches of this or that. I think Tiffany just rebranded their store I saw, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, how do you encourage employees to feel safe enough to take those risks and contribute their creative ideas?
We acknowledge that creativity and innovation has to be a core value of the group. That goes to the spirit and the beginning stages of all of our businesses. These brands were created by entrepreneurs who saw a need in the market, they saw a gap, or they just had an incredible idea that they wanted to bring to life. So that creative element is so essential and core to our brands. The challenge is always, especially as you become a larger organization, more employees, global brands, how do you maintain creativity and innovation? There was probably a period in the beginning where a lot of the creativity was coming from the headquarters, certainly around product or even retail experience. That's not really a sustainable model anymore. We know that in businesses of our size and complexity, appealing to a much wider demographic of customers around the world, innovation has to come from everywhere. And so it starts with having a leader, the right leader, who really places the value on creativity, who creates a trustful and safe environment, I would say, where people feel that their ideas can be heard, their ideas can be shared, where they have a mechanism to actually communicate their ideas, and they have a voice and a seat at the table. So I think we put a lot of emphasis on having leaders in the organization at all different functional levels and around the world that will help cultivate creativity. Through our learning and development house, we've tried to create programs that can engender and cultivate creativity, just even the mindset. So much of it is just getting people in the mindset that, you know, from wherever you are sitting, you see something different about the business, or you see an aspect of the business that others don't see. So one of the programs that we launched in 2016 was a program called DARE, which is Dare, Act, Risk, and Think Like an Entrepreneur, basically. And we have a company that we bring in to help us animate this, basically startup workshops. And we launched these programs around the world. We've had literally thousands of employees at this point that have gone through the program, submitted ideas. It starts with submission of an idea that you have. It could be a business idea. It could be an HR idea. We're very open in terms of the employees submitting an idea where they see an opportunity to create something new for the group. And then we take all the ideas, we narrow it down to the top 60. We bring them for this 2 or 3 day event. They present their ideas. We have internal and external experts that align on the top ideas. And then we spend the next few days with this external partner incubating the ideas. Now, through this, over the last several years, we've actually come up with a number of really interesting ideas from our employees that are being incubated. But actually, more than that, the idea is to start helping people understand, how do you go from an idea to actualization of that? And that's where this company helps us to teach people the skills around creativity. So actually, it's more of a talent management program, in fact, when you look at it, because the idea is we need to cultivate this way of thinking around 200,000 employees around the world. So that's just one very concrete way where we're trying to instill this idea of creativity. Anybody can participate, anybody can submit an idea. And you know, so many of those ideas have been supported, but also I think it's helped change the mindset of employees around the world at all levels.
We do something similar where we ask people to be revealing and challenging and bring new ideas and challenge others' ideas and share what they have on their mind. It opens it up tremendously.
Yeah, just letting people know that, hey, we really want to hear from you. You know, we want to hear what you have to say and what you're thinking. And I think sometimes you have to be explicit and letting people know, and then you know, giving them the opportunity to share their voice.
So this new trend with AI, right? It's no secret that it's changing the creative landscape. Frankly, for us, when we're doing recruiting, we have people do certain assessments for skills, and we have now found that people are just typing it in and copying what AI says. So it's, you know, wow. It's just created another layer of awareness that's happening. So I'm just curious to know how you see AI interacting with the luxury goods workforce, if at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, of course, like everyone, we're talking a lot about it. And we actually have a couple of task force that are looking at it, both from an employee standpoint and from a business standpoint, because I think we all know that AI is going to play a role, probably many different roles in different aspects of our business. And what does that look like? The first thing right now for us is just education and learning. Just on the business side, you have intellectual property issues. I mean, there's a host of things that have to be really understood and sorted out. I think on the HR side, we're certainly not there yet in having a solution or understanding how it's going to support our work. I'm hopeful that we'll find a balance to, yes, maybe reduce some type of work, but actually create opportunity for other real value add work by using AI and other technologies in a much more thoughtful and strategic way.
And since, you know, you all hire, as we're talking about, for really skilled craftspeople. I mean, clearly there's no AI involved in that. So you have designers and leather workers and vintners and more. So how do you approach hiring with such, you know, when you're looking for such specialized talent?
Part of it starts with just awareness, you know, meaning that we need to be very vocal about the fact that these jobs exist within LVMH, because I don't think that everybody knows. I mean, a lot of people might even think that much of the work is automated or that you have, you know, technology doing a lot of the work. So many of our processes are really truly still and will probably always be done by people. There are just certain aspects that a machine isn't going to be able to deliver. So I think the first thing that we have to do, and that's, you know, some of the programs that we've launched, is just to bring awareness to the different dimensions of the roles. I mean, there are so many people, and we have the fortune of meeting with them all the time, that they don't want to work in a traditional sort of corporate environment. They want to work with their hands. They want to create. They want to build something. So we have to bring awareness to these types of roles. We launched a program a few years ago called the Métiers d'Excellence, which is basically taking all of these trades, working with different schools around the world that also have an expertise in developing these trades, and creating programs to continue to make sure that we have recognition of these needs, that we are able to, together with the schools, build out the curriculums so that we can cultivate these skills over the next many, many years. So we've been fortunate to work with schools all over the world, whether it's watchmaking schools in Switzerland or fashion design schools in Italy and France, jewelry design schools here in North America for a Tiffany program, to identify students that we can bring into these programs and we can train. And by the way, we're training them certainly for LVMH, and we would love to be able to hire these people, but they can also go work at other companies as well. How do we continue to cultivate these skills for our industry as a whole, not just specifically for the group?
So Toptal's always been a fully remote company. So we've been global for the 13 years that we've been in business, never had an office in 75 plus countries. And you oversee HR for 40,000 employees spread across just North America alone. And many of them are hybrid or remote roles. So how do you keep your folks connected in whatever situation that they happen to be in?
It's always been a challenge for us because we're such a large organization. And again, the U.S. is a very large country. If you just look at North America, the U.S. and Canada, these are very large regions. So even pre-COVID, being able to bring our employees together was not that easy to do. Again, we have a very decentralized approach. So even though there are 40,000 employees in the region and we look at them as LVMH employees, each of them work for their own brand or their own maison. So all of these businesses have their own philosophy or policy as it relates to hybrid work or flex work. And of course, that's evolved a lot since 2020, as for all of our industries, the exception of yours that has always had this policy. We definitely did not have any sort of remote working policy at all. It wasn't part of our culture. Again, going back to the core value, people make the difference. It's really been about people, that connectivity, especially if you think that most of our employees work in a retail environment. So for them, they've always needed to be in the physical store. And we feel a sense of solidarity and support. So, you know, wanting to be there in support of our employees. On the one hand, during COVID, there were some silver linings because we, of course, pivoted our entire learning and development platform, which used to be everything was in person. We, of course, pivoted that online. And we developed very quickly all sorts of new programming that we were able to deploy. Some of it was very focused on leadership development. Some of it was focused on community. Some of it was just focused on opportunities, fun opportunities to bring people together. And we were able to reach thousands of employees in a way that we had never been able to do before. And it was a big light bulb moment for us to say, okay, we can't go back to just having a handful of people out of the 40,000 coming to in-person learning and development every year. We have to maintain this hybrid philosophy. So doing that with learning and development with all of our ERGs, I think has really helped us to build a much stronger community in North America. But it's certainly challenging because, again, we're an organization that wants to meet with people. We have to continue pushing ourselves to have very special moments that we connect with people. And when we have them, we make really something meaningful out of that time together, which is, you know, more and more what we're seeing is working in our organization.
One of the things that my team's focused on this year is internal mobility, right? So making sure, and you, it sounds like, you know, if someone has a great skill set, being able to utilize them, if we're not as busy over here, where does your skills translate to a different department or function, or we can help up-level them. But I assume with you, because you have different brands, you're also able to move people between the different brands as well.
Yes, that has always been one of our key competitive advantages. I think it's a big differentiator for us. And we know that. We see that when we're talking to talent at really any level, a senior executive, an early career professional, a mid-level, it doesn't really matter. We have the ability to offer you not only a role today within this particular business or geography even, but to hopefully show you what your career could look like across the group. And we have great success stories of people that have worked across multiple maisons, multiple geographies, different functions, going from supply chain into retail. That's something that we can really offer that's very unique. And we know that we have that as a competitive advantage if we do it well.
So I know the other thing that employees are looking for, you know, when they're looking at their options out there is benefits. As a global company, is there one or two benefits that are extremely important to you all that you focus on or that people are asking for?
We just did a benefit survey. It was more North American focused, but I would imagine it's somewhat similar based on other surveys that we've done. We see that employees, number one, they want to make sure that all of the core benefits are in place. And it's really having best access to healthcare at the best price as possible. Vision, dental, all the basics have to really be covered. I think that we, you know, we were surprised, to be honest with you, that that was really fundamentally what a lot of employees were asking. Sometimes we make assumptions about what people want, but when you ask them, it wasn't in a way as complicated. I think what's different, more than maybe the geographical differences, is demographic differences in terms of where you are in your life, what is important to you. It could, at an older age, it could be parental care. At a younger age, it's childcare. If you don't have children, maybe having access to a sabbatical or the higher levels of flexibility. So what we've tried to understand from people is what is important to you, so that perhaps we could even have a menu of different types of benefits that we offer that people could sort of select. You have your core benefits, and then you could select other things that you could add to that. And again, that can change over different periods of your life. The last thing I would say on that is the other super number one request that we heard from our employees was access to mental health support and resources. So we're looking at lots of different tools at the group level, at the maison level, that we can bring to our employees to support them and their family members with the topic of mental health and well-being.
Yeah. So we've done, you know, we've always had the Calm app, I think, when COVID started. And then we have had people in Eastern Europe where there's wars and know, civic unrest. And I have people in the Philippines where there's been hurricanes and typhoons. And we actually partner with a company called Frankie Health that is global. So it's multiple languages all over, and it's counselors to help people. Oh, that's amazing. I just feel like this is very tailored and very country specific too. So that if someone feels more comfortable speaking in their native language, if it's Polish, they can speak in Polish. If it's Czech, whatever it is, so that they can feel more comfortable expressing emotional things.
Of course.
In that type. So awesome. Yeah, it's something that we did a year ago as well. So it's been very beneficial for us. And it's been one of the major things that we get kudos about for thank you for thinking of us and proactively giving us this benefit. So
yes, we know it's really top of mind for all of our employees. And I love that program. And I agree with you. I think being able for as an employee to have this conversation, especially because it's a very sensitive topic. So being able to have this with not only in your language, but someone that understands your culture is critical, because certainly mental health is perceived different ways around in different countries. And I think certainly you couldn't have like a one size fits all solution.
So I know that in 2012, you led the first ever diversity and inclusion initiative. So a long time ago.
Yes.
Rolling that out across North America. So why was that so important in luxury goods, and how is that sustained and continued in the 11 years since it's been rolled out?
We are a very diverse group just by the nature of the different product categories, the regions, the population of talent that we have that come from all over the world. So it's always been a core part of the group. Fundamentally, like any business, especially a consumer business, we want to mirror the world that we live in. From a customer standpoint, from an employee standpoint, we need to make sure that we have diversity represented so that we can be appealing and interesting and attractive to our customers. We're not sitting in museums honoring the work of our founders. We're living in the moment, and we're living in culture. And we are living, especially in North America, in very, very diverse culture. And we need to reflect that. We need to reflect that again in our products, in our marketing, our communications, and our employees, all of this. So we had to be more explicit about the fact that this is really important to us. We want to hold leaders accountable for having diverse teams, for having inclusive teams, which is more of the challenge, right? It's on the one hand, you can have a diverse team, but if you don't have a team where people feel included and that their voice is really listened to and they're able to interact, it doesn't even work, right? So we had to build these two pieces together. You know, whether it was signing the UN Women's Empowerment Principles or the LGBTQ Standard Business Code of Conduct in 2019 that we signed around the world, whether it was our commitment to people with disability, having at least 2% of our workforce having people with disability, all of these global standards that we have signed in commitment of DE&I, and then holding ourselves accountable. So it's crucial for any business today, and again, especially a consumer-driven business, and it is a fundamental part of our HR strategy.
I think another thing that's really important also these days is environmental impact and what companies' impacts are. So since increasing number of employees place a high value on their company's social and environmental impact, I know that you've shown dedication to that through, I think it's Life 360 and Life 2020 programs. Can you share a little bit more about what those programs are about?
Yeah, I think that is interesting because part of being in a French group is what I realized and learned is the group was taking a lot of actions, but not really communicating on them. We were the first European group in 1992 to even set up an environmental division. No one else was really doing that. The focus at that time was very much on the store. So the lighting, the air conditioning, making sure that we're using as little energy as possible. And this was implemented in our store development and design. Again, going back to 1992, we had a sustainability, but we never spoke about it. We didn't talk about the fact that the group was doing that. So we came out very, loudly, I would say, with this initiative, Life 360, and the commitments that we have. And there's so many, I wouldn't be able to articulate them all, because you have certain brand commitments, and it could be around packaging, where, for example, Guerlain has been very advanced for, again, many years in terms of the type of packaging and what they use and how they recycle and reuse some of the product, whether it's wines and spirits and the way that they manage their crops. Brands like Fresh, who've always been focused on nature and working with nature in the most sustainable ways not to mention Stella McCartney and everything that she has been doing. Gabriella Hearst is another brand that we invested in, and she's very focused on sustainability. You know, everything she does with this idea of carbon neutrality, her fashion shows, everything. Stella is very much the same way. So we have a number of initiatives across each of the brands, and that's, again, what we encourage. The group has to set the overarching strategy. The group has to hold brands accountable to a certain ultimate outcome, but the brands who are actually managing their businesses have to identify how they're going to incorporate sustainability into each of their businesses. And that's really what's happening across all of our brands, I would say across all 75 of our maisons. And that's what's amazing about our group, is we have this ability to have really mega impact because of all of the different regions that we operate and all of the brands that we have, and the partners that we work with, that we can also hold accountable to higher level of standards, which is certainly the way that brands like Tiffany, I mean, Tiffany was the brand, and certainly before us, they created the Kimberley process to ensure integrity in the diamond manufacturing vertical. They created that and transformed the whole industry by doing that. So, you know, we actually have a number of stories like that across each of our brands. It's important that we communicate that so that employees and customers know that it's a key strategic imperative for us.
So you were early adapters, but nobody was talking about it. So now you're talking about it.
Yeah. And again, not to say that we're perfect. There's still a lot.
Nobody is.
But, you know, like Laura Piana, again, they don't talk about it. They have literally saved the extinction of certain animal species because the way that they work with these animals and communities to create their product with never harming any animals in the process. So, but they've literally saved different species from going extinct.
Wow, that's great. I'm going to wrap up with two final questions. So first, I'm an avid reader in all of my spare time. So I love to ask my guests if there's any books that, you know, that have positively impacted your leadership or the things you recommend to your team. What comes to mind to you?
Well, I'm also an avid reader, and you know, I've read lots of different kind of books. I tend to like books that are historical fiction or biographies about people, and I really love reading about people. But two books most recently that I read that I really enjoyed, one of them is a book about Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette's daughter. And it was fascinating because we've all heard the story of the French Revolution and we know what happens, but there were children that they had, and the son was killed in a pretty horrific way. And the daughter was basically saved. And it's her life is really incredible. The way that she was able to forge her life after what happened to her family was just a very powerful story of the human resilience and forgiveness, frankly, and the ability to really contribute and to recover from something that was, of course, so traumatic. So that was a really powerful book. And then the other book that I read most recently that I really, really enjoyed was What It Takes by Stephen Schwarzman. And if you haven't read it, I really encourage it. He talks about Blackstone. He talks about all of his learning journey away, you know, and he's very vulnerable, which I really appreciated. Mistakes that he made in terms of talent, mistakes that he made from a business standpoint. You look at successful people and we think, oh, he really did not come from a very successful beginning. He worked hard to get where he is. But I just appreciated his vulnerability and humility in the book. And it was a very fast and interesting read.
Okay. I just wrote it down. Final question. I always wrap with this question. So what has been your proudest moment as a leader?
I mean, when I took this position 12 years ago, the position had been vacant for about a year and a half. The whole team had sort of been decimated. So I came in, the team was configured without any of us knowing each other. We came in together, and particularly the U.S. leadership team was pretty fragmented. I'd say not really working. Everybody worked fine together, but there was no community. There was no collaboration. There was no sort of sense of responsibility or accountability to each other. It was a very decentralized way of working. And we knew that we needed to build a community, and we needed to identify synergies to be able to support the business. And we needed to build trust in order to do that. And so it took us really about 5 years to come together as a new leadership team and to bring this whole community together. And it was extremely powerful once we were able to do that, because once we had created this sense of trust and sharing, we were able to understand what were the key priorities and how could we as a group HR team really support the region in the most effective way. And it transformed everything. It was incredible in terms of going from people telling me in the beginning, I don't need anything we're fine, we don't need anything, to then building a community where people couldn't imagine not working together. And they understood the power of that and really enjoyed it. So I would say that I'm really proud of that, because again, that was the foundation that really allowed us to have any success in any of the initiatives that we felt were important for our region.
Right. Well, Gina Smith, CHRO of LVMH North America, thank you so much for your time and insights today. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you so much, Michelle, as well. It was wonderful to meet you.
Thank you for listening to The Talent Economy. I'm your host, Michelle Labby. You can find much more information about The Talent Economy on staffing.com and toptel.com/insights. Hubs for bold, comprehensive content featuring business thought leaders and authoritative research focused on the future of work.